The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Bright Side Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side. Hey, this week we're going to talk Captain Marvel. First, we'll talk spoiler-free till about the 18-minute mark. That's when we start the comic news. Then we do the recommendations at the 30-minute mark. And then we get into full spoilers with Captain Marvel at about the 46-minute mark. And don't forget to listen at the end on how you could save money from our sponsors. So let's head on into the store. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm living the dream, DJ. How are you?
What's this, take five?
Yeah.
Stupid.
This is at least take three. I don't know.
Stupid technology. Let's hope this one sticks.
I hope so. As I was saying, I can only ramp up this level of enthusiasm so many times.
Yeah, and I'm staring at my monitor right now, making sure this thing doesn't shut down. Enough of that stuff. How was your week?
It was all right. I've been a little under the weather this week.
Yeah, so. Don't say.
Yeah, I know, right? Maybe you've heard that before.
Oh, man.
Yeah, fighting off a bit of the flu, so... I apologize in advance if I cough a little bit during the broadcast, but I'll try to keep it to a minimum.
Nice. Thank you. We all appreciate that.
I'm sure.
So we had a...
I'll just cough out a lung off to the side and then we'll keep on going.
Yeah.
That's what kind of a trooper I am.
I'll remove that in post.
Yeah. You'll be able to see it.
Yeah,
they won't.
Yeah, exactly. There it goes.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a big week, though.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, we're getting more and more listeners. We're getting people are starting to talk to us more. We're getting comments on Twitter. We get Dr. Joe Gilmore gave us a review on iTunes. Said he called it a hell of a podcast. Gave us five.
I saw that.
Yeah, gave us five stars. Said these guys are great. What I love most is the passion these guys have about comics. You could tell they're having a fun time. Start to finish, each episode is fantastic. And then,
wow, I love to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Joe. And chatting with him on, actually had a conversation with him on Twitter last week. I think you saw that too.
I did.
And talking about going into the stores and stuff like that. And, reading singles as opposed to getting the trades and going back into the stores and talking to people. That's what spawned my tweet about that, which I think is great because it's really, especially now I'm going to a bunch of different stores and we'll talk about that later too because I've had a few conversations about our topic today, Captain Marvel. Why don't we do a...
Controversial,
yeah. Let's do a little bit. We'll do a little bit before we get into comics, spoiler-free, and then we'll just, after the comics, when we really talk about it, we're going to go full spoiler. What'd you think?
I really liked it. I don't think it's my favorite Marvel movie, but it's definitely a good movie.
Oh, it's not better than Infinity War?
It is not better than Infinity War. At least to this humble opinion, it's not. I would definitely put it. I saw a couple of rankings out on Twitter this week, and I saw that you participated in one.
Yeah,
I don't have the energy to write something like that out on paper. But I definitely agree that Captain Marvel would be in my top 10 Marvel movies. Don't think it would crack the top 3 or 5 though.
Oh, definitely not. And it's funny because when I first saw that one, when I saw his, Wes's, it said that, I can't remember where exactly he had Captain Marvel.
I think he had it at 10, actually.
Yeah, and it's like you see that and you go, oh, wow, that's low. But then you look at the 9 movies in front of it or whatever and you go, no, that's actually about right. And it's like, right. And same thing, I really, really liked Captain Marvel, but all those other movies that are in front of it are really good too. And then I started making my list. And even after I put my list out, I was looking at my list going, well, I could move that there. They're all just so good. The only ones that I think the bottom ones seem to be consistent on every list, almost every list I've seen.
Well, and I think you have a little bit of bias for the thing that you saw, you know, recency bias.
Yes.
Because it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
Like, literally to put together a correct list in my mind, and, you know, who's to say what's a correct list, but I would really have to watch all the movies again because I can't judge them all from what I saw 2 years ago.
Right.
And find out exactly where it would fit in because I saw Captain Marvel 6 days ago. So it's fresh
right
in my mind. And, you know, obviously that's what I'm thinking about. So,
yeah, I just watched the first Avenger right after I sent out that list. And I was actually in the middle of watching First Avenger when I made that list. And right. you see things in the movies after the fact, because all these movies have so much in them that pertain to each, to upcoming movies and past movies.
Right.
And when you go back now and you watch past movies, and we'll talk about this in when we get to the spoilers, there's stuff in previous movies that pertain to this movie. And it's just, that's what makes these so much fun, just to go back and watch again later.
Right. Well, what's great about that, and actually what's impressive about it at the same time, is that, you know, these are all under the direction of Kevin Feige, obviously, but there's multiple writers involved. Like, there's different writers involved in all these franchises. So, like, the communication that must have to happen between all of these teams of writers and producers and directors and you name it, to keep all this stuff cohesive. Like, I just wonder if Kevin Feige has a bullet list somewhere where he says to the writers, okay, in Captain Marvel, you need to sew in these three Easter eggs that tie into
three,
you know, XYZ yeah. movie. Or do they just, the writers, as they're writing Captain Marvel, think, oh, well, I saw this in First Avenger, so wouldn't right. it be cool if I did this to tie it in?
Yeah.
You know, but it's really cool that, like I said, all the writers and all the people that are involved in, you know, producing the whole MCU, and they all seem to be in step with each other and, you know, are able to sew these things in and keep us, you know, picking them out and guessing what's going to come next. So.
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, you think all the ways they could be tying these Easter eggs in, and it's just, there's so many of them, and it's hard to keep up. I've seen the movie twice. After we record this, that's when I'll start watching the YouTube special, you know, all the stuff to find all the Easter eggs that you missed. I like to watch the movie for myself, see what I pick out myself, and then you and I are going to talk about it tonight, and then I'll go back and see, oh, I missed that one, I missed this one, I missed that one.
And not even just the MCU movies, but this movie in particular had a couple of shout-outs to Pulp Fiction. I don't know if you've seen those online at all.
I haven't seen the Pulp Fiction. There's one that I picked up that I'll talk about later.
And then, of course, you know, I don't want to spoil Stan Lee's cameo just yet. We'll talk about it later.
Oh, he had a cameo?
Yeah. Obviously, that's a love letter to another franchise from the 90s. So,
yeah.
So there's a lot of things that they wrapped into this thing. The Pulp Fiction ones are really cool. It's hard to describe them, you know, non-visually. You know, just me talking about it wouldn't really do them justice. So I would look them up online and see, because there's some cool tie-ins to Pulp Fiction for sure.
I'm trying to think of what it could be. Is it a spoiler?
Well, there's not spoilers,
oh, okay.
But it's just hard to describe without the visuals. Like, there's a scene where Coulson and Fury are sitting in the car, and you can tell angles, and they're both wearing the suit and ties.
Yep.
And then you put up the still from Pulp Fiction with John Travolta and Sam Jackson, and it's like the same shot.
Right.
Yep. You know? And then there's the scene where the Skrull, the leader of the Skrulls, I can't think of his name, comes in drinking that cup, and it's the same cup Sam Jackson was drinking out of in Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
the same exact cup, sipping it just like he did
in that scene with the
with the
burger and the
right the big Kahuna burger.
Yeah, can I have a sip of your tasty beverage?
Right. So again, just there's no way that was not intentional.
Right.
I mean, there's no way it could be an accident. So
right. It is the biggest Sam Jackson movie so far for Marvel. It's his biggest role, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no doubt. You know, I think
I couldn't.
He has more screen time here than anywhere, really, than most all the other ones put together.
And most
I would
of
say,
it isn't even
for,
him,
right?
It's like digitally rendered.
Yeah, I will say too. Again, this isn't really a spoiler, but
yeah,
I thought they did a great job with Sam Jackson once again with the CGI and yep. kind of the de-aging process. I felt like they missed a little bit with Coulson though. He seemed to not look as natural,
right?
I think, than Sam Jackson did. He kind of had that. It really reminded me of Twilight. Like, he looked like the sparkly vampire a
yeah,
little bit.
Yeah, he's a little too smooth.
Just a little too shiny and smooth.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he's the one, he's closer to the same age. Like, Coulson doesn't even look that old to begin with.
Right, yeah.
He should have been the easier one of the two to bring back to, you know. You could have almost done that with makeup. I don't know if you even had to do it
right
with CGI, you know.
Yeah, no. I thought the exact same thing. But all in all, I thought they did a great job. I mean,
like I said, Sam Jackson, you really couldn't tell. It really looked like it was just an old Sam Jackson movie.
Yeah.
They did. I couldn't find any spots in that where they slipped up or missed at all. Like, he looked great through the whole thing. So, I thought it was really good.
Nice. Yeah. What'd you think of Brie?
I liked her. I thought she did a good job. You know, a lot of people, you know, we'll talk about this either now or later. It doesn't really matter. You know, we've talked about it before. Well, I'm just saying, I don't know how much you want to get into it now. But, I mean, obviously there was a lot of hate for her surrounding this movie. We touched on it last week. We touched on it the week before. And a lot of people were criticizing her acting. You know, she spent 80% of the movie, you know, not knowing who she is or where she came from.
Right.
You know, I mean, how you're supposed to come off when
I thought that
when that's what your character is. And
right.
I thought she did a great job. Where there needed to be humor, I thought she brought the humor in. I thought she had good personality. I thought when she needed to be kicking ass, she was kicking ass. You know, I mean.
Right.
I thought she did a great job, so I can't complain.
Yeah, I thought her personality was great, and I'll talk more in spoilers, because actually her personality pertains to one of the what I thought was an homage. I'm not sure. It's something I picked out myself. I haven't seen anything about it, but and it might just be my interpretation, but it pertains to how she acted too. I thought she was great. I thought the role was great. I thought she did a really good job of portraying that person. It just exactly like you said. And, you know, you have no memory, or you don't know what your memory, you know what I mean? It's not even like she knows she lost her memory. She's like, what's going on? She doesn't know anything. And then just her overall personality as the person, that bullheaded person. The one thing that I'll say, and I don't think this is a spoiler, is in the comics, one of the things I liked about her when reading her was she's a lot like, Spider-Man in that she's very, she talks a lot. She's
she's
battle.
Quippy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, a lot of quips and kind of.
And they did do it. They portrayed her that way, but not as much during the battle scenes that I would have liked, you know? I don't think that's a spoiler, but I mean, there are battle scenes, people, if you haven't seen it.
Right. Well, you can see it's in the trailer.
Yeah.
So.
But you know what I mean? It wasn't as much as I would remember in, Civil War. And that was the first time I think in the Spider-Man movies, the first Spider-Man that I felt was really as quippy as he is in the comic books.
The Andrew Garfield Spider-Man had quite a bit of that, I thought, too.
I didn't think it was as much or as, I don't know, it just didn't resonate with me as well. Whereas in...
Right, no, I agree with
remember
you.
Remember they
I
were
Tom
like,
Holland
will this guy ever shut up?
Right. Like, well, the thing is, like, to me, you know, now we're on to Spider-Man and not Captain Marvel, but, you know... I thought
no, but
that,
that's what I like about Captain Marvel too. She's like, have you ever seen the ones or read the comics where she actually is battling him, like in a training session,
yeah.
and they're going at each other, like verbally.
Right, but what I was going to say is Tom Holland is the first one that actually played the perfect Spider-Man and Peter Parker.
Yes,
you know, like Tobey Maguire was good as one, but not as good as the other. you know, and then Andrew Garfield, you know, he was a better Spider-Man, but not quite as good of a Peter Parker. So
right.
Tom Holland is the first one that's really kind of got both of them put together. And, you know, now we're off. Like I said, now we're completely off the subject of Captain Marvel. But
all under the Marvel universe. Get it?
That's right.
We're right back into Marvel. There you go.
It's all under the big umbrella.
Yep. So. All right. Is that enough of that?
I think so. I mean, we could just go right into Captain Marvel and skip everything else. So I think we should move on before. No, because I would say if we keep on going.
If we keep on going,
we're going to move on to the
exactly.
end.
All right. Yeah, let's get into... let me do this now because I was supposed to do it last week and we got going. We have a new sponsor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Apothesis Comics and Lounge. Out of Seattle. St. Louis. I'm reading it here. ST. Out of St. Louis.
All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're actually, I came across them on Twitter and I asked if I could talk to them, give them a call and just talk to them about their store because it's a store and a bar.
Right.
So it was pretty cool. I talked to them about how they, you know, got their liquor license, you know, seeing that comics seem to be mostly for kids, or that's the perception. And they said, well, we are St. Louis, not Seattle, like an idiot. They're St. Louis, home of Budweiser, so that really wasn't a problem. It's beer out there is kind of a lifestyle for them, he said. So they're gonna put our posters up in their store. They're going to support us and support our listeners. So.
Awesome.
I'm pretty psyched. We're expanding outside our little we're now
I know. Now we're in like over three states.
Yeah. No, actually
I could have just said four states, but
yep.
it seems better to say over three.
So all right. So now how do we want to spend our money this week in any of these stores that we're frequenting?
The speculator front was a little bit quiet this week. There really weren't a whole lot to talk about. Biggest one is probably the Del Auto variant for Batman Who Laughs, The Grim Knight number one. Selling for $6 to $7, so it's not a whole lot over cover price, but it's a great looking cover, and, you know, there should be
that one
a lot of them out there at this point. Like, I don't think it should be too hard to track down.
Is it that cover?
Yes.
Yeah, awesome yes. cover. It is. That's the cover I got. It's awesome.
Yeah, so you and I both got to see it, but nobody else did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the one to keep an eye on. I would also keep an eye on Batman Who Laughs, issues 1 and 2, which are the first and second appearances of the Grim Knight. You know, they're going to start to tick up a little bit, too, as this book catches on. Now, this was only a one-shot issue, so... It's, you know, this is all we get, excuse me, of it. But I look forward to reading this. It should be a good one this week. And then the Catwoman issue number 9, the Art Germ variant. So this one's a little weird. It looks like it was printed upside down, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see this. DC's claiming that it was intentionally printed that way. Art Germ said on his Twitter that it wasn't intended to be that way.
It looks like
DC actually printed this thing upside down. This thing, I say most likely, there is actually no chance that this is going to get recalled or reprinted. So it's not going to be an error or anything. I mean, it is just the way it is. So don't pick it up necessarily because you think it may be an error book. Just buy it for the awesome upside down cover because it's still a great looking book.
Yeah, I saw it. I actually didn't think anything of it though. I thought it was
Well, but if you look at the Batman portrait behind her, it's upside down.
Oh.
And so, you know, you could say that, you know, DC is saying, well, we're looking at it from Catwoman's perspective and she's hanging upside down. But you know, his Archerum signature on the photo is also upside down. And why would he sign his cover upside down? So,
right.
I don't know. It's one of those things. It's kind of like, is the dress blue or is it gray or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We're never going to know, but it's still a cool cover. Again, not really lighting up the, you know, the market as far as dollars go, but like I said, it was a quiet week, so those are the two that I would take a look at. As far as back issues go for this week, Giant Size Conan number 1 and Conan number 58. These are the first appearance and cameo appearance of Belit. So Belit had a miniseries that dropped today, Age of Conan Belit. It's going to be a 5-issue miniseries. I think I've mentioned her before. She's like a pirate character that's been in and out of Conan, you know, for several years. This is also a great-looking book. I did sell out of this today, too, so I didn't have it listed as one of my speculator books, but it may be because I had quite a few people looking for it. But the books, like I said, those first appearances, I would keep an eye on those if this becomes a really popular miniseries and we see her going forward again in the new Conan stories. I wouldn't be surprised to see those books start to raise in price. From 1994, we have Superboy number 9. This is the first appearance of King Shark. You know, we've seen King Shark a few times on the CW with the Flash, but he is now rumored to be in James Gunn's Suicide Squad sequel. So that sparked the price of this book to jump to about $25. That's not a confirmed, you know, there's not a confirmed roster for that movie yet, so this could turn out to not be the case, but a lot of people are speculating that he'll be in this book, so are in that movie. Cool. The Hulk, number 16 from 2008. This is the first full appearance of the Red She-Hulk. So in last week's Immortal Hulk issue, we had indication that the Red She-Hulk may reappear. For those that don't know, that's Betty Ross, who is Bruce's wife currently in the comics. She was the Red She-Hulk. So if she reappears, I would expect to see this book jump up in price again. Right now it's selling for about $25. There is also a 1 in 15 variant cover for that book, and that's selling for around $70. So those are also books to keep an eye on. I guess we'll know for sure next month in the Immortal Hulk whether she comes back or not. And then Fantastic Four number 65. This is the first appearance of the Kree and Ronan the Accuser. I'll leave it up to you guys to figure out why that book is hot right now. I won't give anything away. And Giant Size Miss Marvel number 1. This is the first appearance of either Chewie or Goose, depending on what you want to call Carol Danvers' cat. This book is hitting about $50. Once again, I'll let you guess why this book is hot right now.
Well, I don't think that's a spoiler. People have seen the posters.
Yeah, no, I know. I just was trying to be
facetious. And that's kind of a hot topic. But, no, I know.
Yeah. But yeah, so obviously, you know, the cat played a pretty big role in the movie. Yeah. And, you know, also plays a big role in most of the comics. So her cat's been around for a while. So this is her first appearance. His first appearance, I guess. And that's it for speculator and back issue books for this week. So not a ton to talk about.
Cool.
FOC, we've got for DC, we've got Catwoman number 10 has an Art Germ variant cover that looks pretty good. Detective Comics 1001 has a David Finch cover. This actually is the best looking cover, I think, out of the bunch this week. It really looks great.
Is the Catwoman number 10 going to have an arrow on it pointing up?
Yeah, this end up. yeah, it could. We'll see.
Same Red artist.
Red Hood number... Yeah, right. Yeah, definitely is Art Germ. Red Hood number 33, we have a Lucio Perillo variant cover. This is also a really good-looking cover for Red Hood number 33. And Wonder Woman 68, we have Carrie Andrews cover. And that also looks pretty good. So you can't go wrong with any of those. Four, no new series from DC next week to talk about. So that's really all we have for that. From Image Comics, we have a new series called Fair Lady number 1. Well, obviously it's number 1 because it's a new series. So I wasn't sure what this was about. Yeah, I wasn't sure what this was about, so I read the little synopsis for it. And this line that I read that I'm going to read you sold me on this book. So it's described as a procedural case-solving like Magnum P.I. set in the vibrant Rat Queens high fantasy world. I don't know what more you want, but there's no more that I want. So I think that sounds pretty awesome. For those that haven't read Rat Queens, it's a Dungeons and Dragons type fantasy world. So to me, a Magnum P.I. procedural set in that type of world sounds pretty awesome. You know, if we can get Rick and TC in there too,
yeah,
we'll be good to go. Again, showing our age.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's a current Magnum PI TV series on, so
they're all different.
Yeah, but they have the same name.
Right, right.
So it's still Magnum and Rick and TC. So, all right, from Marvel, we variant covers. We have War of the Realms #2. There is also a stupid number of variants for this book. There's not 28 of them. There's only about 6 or 7.
I like in the written notes you send me, it says, stupid number of variants again.
Right, because it's ridiculous.
Like, you have to write that because you might forget?
Yeah, I wanted to remember to say that. No, I knew there was a bunch of variants.
Right.
I just wanted to remember to say stupid number. This humor is not unrehearsed, ladies and gentlemen. I work at it. For new series, we've got Symbiote Spider-Man #1. There is multiple covers for this, but the Art Germ variant cover that is Gwen Stacy is beautiful. It's a great looking cover, and it is open to order. So that's the one that I would go in and try to get ordered. Most stores should order fairly heavy on it anyways, but if you want to guarantee yourself one, I would go in and order it. We have several spinoffs for War of the Realms starting. War of the Realms Journey into Mystery and War of Scrolls. Both issue #1s are on order. There's multiple covers for each one of these. And these are, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 issue miniseries, depending. Each one's a little different. And there's a ton of tie-in series to War of the Realms. If you haven't seen the checklist yet in the store, there's going to be about 12 different miniseries tying into this thing. So
yeah, they got me.
Yeah, we'll be talking War of the Realms for a while.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I
see. Yeah, I think it's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to reading it. But there's a lot. There's going to be a lot to keep up with.
Yeah, when I signed up for my subscription, I just went. I was like, oh, put me down for War of the Realms. And they're like, okay, do you want? And I was like,
you want all of it?
and it's like, they're all like, you know, spinoffs, like 5 series things. So I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm like, they're not all coming out at once, are they?
Well, there'll be several each week, though. Like, I imagine there'll be, if there's 4 or 5 miniseries, there'll be one each week coming out, I would think.
Right. So, yeah,
and
so
then
that's
at
cool.
A certain point, you'll have #1s mixing with #2s from the other one. So, yeah, it's going to be an investment.
That's why I'm going to have to get caught up on all my reading before then. So that
it's going to be an investment of not only money, but time. It's just reading all those books.
Well, that's
and keeping up with them. In addition to everything else that's coming out each week, it's going to be, you know, really tough. And you really can't skip War of the Realm. Like a lot of people say, well, I'll wait till it ends and I'll read it all at once. But it's also crossing over into like your regular Thor or Spider-Man or other series.
Yeah.
So then you have to start skipping issues of those books too. So it's best just to kind of keep up with it all if you can.
Yeah.
You go.
So.
And that's it for new series from Marvel. That's it for the FOC this week. So.
All right. So we're getting into recommended reading?
Recommended reading. Yep. I've got 2.
All right.
This week, and I don't know how many you have that you want to go over.
I
usually ask you if you want to go first, but every single time you've told me no, so I'm just going to go ahead and go first.
So why don't you go first, and then I'll do one, and then my last one, it's not really recommended reading, it's just going to pertain to the topic of the day.
All right. So first book I have is called Little Bird, issue 1 of 5. So this is from Image Comics. It's written by Darcy Van Poelgeest. I'm sure I'd said that wrong. and Ian Bertram does the art. So this was a pretty cool book. It's kind of like, you know, it's almost another post-apocalyptic type of world that this book is set in. You know, mankind is on the brink. Civilization has kind of been destroyed. But some of the institutions have remained in place. Like the big institution in this one seems to be like the Vatican and like the Catholic Church seems to be in charge of most things in this book. So, you know, it follows the character called Little Bird. She's a little girl. You know, her mom goes away hunting one day and never comes back. So this girl is stuck on her own. But she knows what her mother's mission was, which was to free a guy called the Axe. And, you know, he's being held in a prison facility. And that's where, you know, the mother was, you know, her mission was to get this guy free. So the little girl takes it upon herself to try to go in and free this guy from prison. And that's kind of really what most of the book is about. It kind of goes through her journey to the prison, kind of shows her how she gets inside and meets up with this guy called the Axe. So, again, I don't want to give away any spoilers, so I won't go into too much more detail than that. But, you know, it had a lot of good world building in it. If there's anything that was lacking for me, it was the art a little bit. It did feel a little simplistic in a lot of cases. It's just not necessarily my style. But the writing was really good, and the characters were pretty well developed. So I think it's going to be a good series, and I do recommend you go pick that one up.
Cool. That's funny. Kind of the same idea of along the same lines as what I'm going to say about Calamity Kate by Dark Horse Comics. It's written by Magdalene Visaggio.
Who, oh, so she the book that you read last week.
Yeah, right? The Morning in America that
I read. Which I read, by the way. I liked it.
Oh, good. Well, I met her on Saturday, and that's how I found out about Calamity Kate. I talked to her for a little bit about Morning in America and stuff, and I told her what I thought of it and the clicks and stuff. And did I tell you last week what Jen thought about the clicks? Did we get into that? And
it was like, we did.
And yeah, so my wife works in a high school, and she was saying that she doesn't think that those are the way the cliques really are. And I said that if you're not in those cliques, that's how you would perceive the cliques if you read the book Morning in America. So I told her about this, and she was like, that's exactly. She's like, I wasn't in that clique, but that's how you think of them. And it's, did you get that from the book?
Yeah, I did. I know what you're saying.
So we had that conversation, and she said that book, Morning in America, she's been trying to get published for like 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And but then she told me she was Calamity Kate was coming out today, and I was like, oh, cool, I'll get that. And that's a new one, obviously, and she's very excited about it. So I was like, all right, I'll grab that, see how it is. Corin Howell did the art, and same idea. The art was kind of simplistic. Like if you just pop the book open and you look at it, you'd think it was for a younger reader, but the language isn't. So it's an adult, you know, it's got some adult language in it. It's a very interesting story. I don't want to give anything away. It's a fun read. By the end of it, you're like, you get where the story's going, and you're kind of intrigued on how it's going to go. Definitely, if you're at all interested in it, it's a different kind of story. So if you're at all interested in it, I was, definitely pick it up in the store, take a look, flip through it. You'll know right away what I'm talking about if you want. And I recommend getting at least the first copy and then see where you go from there. But it is a different kind of story. It was to me anyways. I enjoyed it, and I'm going to read on, but it's actually, I think it's only three series, one of three, maybe. So I'm not sure, but it was pretty good. Definitely, cool. Definitely worth picking
up. Yeah, I'll take a look because I did like I said, I liked Morning in America, so this, I'll be interested to pick this one up.
This one is different than, completely different from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So was that it for that?
Yep. Yeah, that'll do it for that.
So my second book for this week is Goon Number One. This is from Albatross Funny Books. This is a creator-owned project. It's written and drawn by Eric Powell. So for those that have never heard of the Goon, I guess, this is the 20th anniversary of the character. Eric Powell's been doing this book for quite a long time. Although it's been years since there's been a new issue or a new story.
It's not a hockey fighter?
For the Goon. No, it's not a hockey fighter.
Oh.
So if you read the Goon at all in the past, this is kind of just more of the same. I know a little bit of Goon. I haven't read all of it, but I have seen some of it. I picked this one up and read it, and it was very friendly for new readers. Like, you didn't have to know anything from the past to pick this book up and enjoy it. But again, I could also see where there was lots of references and characters and things that were there for longtime readers to pick up on. But this is, you know, the Goon is basic, you know, he looks like just kind of like he sounds, just like a big, tough, you know, like a dock worker almost. You don't really ever see his face. He's always got like the hat covering, like you can only see from the nose down, you know, because the hats are kind of always covering his face, you know, and he's got that look, just big, strong guy. And of course, you know, his little partner is, you know, a little skinny, you know, little skinny guy that follows him around.
Hey, Spike.
Yeah, but they live in a world where, you know, monsters are rampant. So they spend a lot of time down on the docks, drinking in bars and fighting zombies and other monsters. It was really good. I really liked it a lot. And the Goon's really been on my list for a long time to go back and read all of it. I don't have the time. I really haven't been able to find time to go and do that. But I was glad that I was able to pick this up from issue one and start reading it. So I would definitely recommend checking this book out. In addition, there's a video on YouTube. This is actually what got me into looking at Goon in the first place. There's a video on YouTube, if you look at the Goon movie or Goon unproduced movie or something like that, you'll be able to find it on YouTube. And there's like an animated 5-minute short that it looks like was produced, and it's very professionally done. So this looks like something that was done to be shopped around to sell to a movie studio to try to get a movie of the Goon made. But the smaller, I don't know the name of the other character. I think it's Frankie, was voiced by Paul Giamatti, and, it's really, really well done.
Oh, wow.
And it really makes me sad that this movie didn't get made because it looked like it would have been awesome. So do yourself a favor and look that up on YouTube. It's like I said, about a 5-minute video, and that alone should make you want to pick these books up and read them if you never have. So that's your homework for next week, DJ. Need to look that up and
look up
and watch.
Was that a Goon trailer?
Yep.
Text that to me.
Okay.
No,
all right, and that's it for my recommended reading.
Cool. I'll save mine for when we get into the topic because it's actually part of the topic. You said you haven't read Batman Who Laughs, the Grim Knight one?
I have not.
No. It's good. It's I read it. Everybody's saying it's a one-off. What makes me think that it's not is that it's the Grim Knight 1. They labeled it 1. So I'm hopeful.
Yeah, but every one shot is labeled number one.
Yeah, but
for some odd reason.
But where this is in the middle of the Batman Who Laughs, they could have just left it alone. I'm hoping that there's more. And by the... You didn't have to text it to me now.
You didn't have to say it. Nobody would have known but me and you.
Yeah, I know, but now we're laughing. Yeah. No, but anyways, yeah, by the end of it, there, I think there's an opportunity for there to be more. There's definitely an opportunity there.
It's just like, you know, they're test driving this character, right? Like,
yeah.
It's just like the Batman Who Laughs.
It's
insane. They're throwing him out there to see if he sticks. Batman Who Laughs will come back with another ongoing series, I'm sure,
right,
after this miniseries is done. And Grim Knight, I'm sure, will come back for more. So I think they're just setting the stage.
Yeah.
For this guy.
I can't wait to talk to you about it. It's that crazy. It's that good. It's a lot of, I want to say fun, but it's really not fun.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Pretty grim.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's grim?
Yeah, exactly. That's why
I use Grim Knight is grim? Yeah.
How about, and you didn't read Wonder Twins?
No.
Okay, that's different than the first one. Can't wait.
Yeah?
Yeah. Can't wait.
Okay.
And,
we'll talk about that.
And I did read Dark Visions, Vader Dark Visions.
Yeah, I read it last night myself.
You,
yeah, I finally finished the Darth Vader, you know.
Oh,
the,
that's right. Yeah, you had.
Yeah, I finished that last night, and then I read Dark Visions.
Yeah, and this doesn't really have anything to do with that, right?
No, it didn't have anything to do with, like, and I mentioned that before, that I probably could have just gone and read this
right
without finishing the other series. And actually, Dark Visions seems like it's a 5-issue miniseries,
right,
but it's almost set up like an anthology. Like, I think every issue is going to be very self-contained.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
this
exactly.
story was a one-off. We won't see this story again. But I really liked how, like, Vader unknowingly was the savior to all of these people. And,
well, it's
you know.
I don't know about unknowingly. Like, his intent was different.
Well, it's right. I guess
you know what
unintentionally.
I mean?
Like, unintentionally yeah. was the savior.
Yeah. And
to this whole planet of people. And
it's, yeah, it's definitely, yeah, I guess we won't give away anything.
No, but to the whole universe, Darth Vader is the scourge, right? He's like
right.
feared throughout the galaxy, but on this little planet, he's the knight in black that saved the whole planet, you know?
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly. It's
all a matter of perspective.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That was really interesting to
yeah.
even think of to write a story like that. So definitely worth picking up. And I did finally read the Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
That, and you were telling me that the next one's going to, this one was about Fantastic Four. The next one's going to be about Spider-Man.
Right.
They're awesome. That was,
yeah.
Or I haven't, I'm saying they're, like, I already read the second one. I haven't yet, but it's really good. Definitely
well,
worth picking up.
you and I are both bigger Spider-Man fans than Fantastic Four fans, so
right.
I can only imagine. How that one's going to turn out, you know, as opposed to this one here, which, like I said, was all about the Fantastic Four. But
yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, it had several laugh out loud moments for me.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really, really great.
I had,
it was pretty deep too. I don't know if you got, like, I got the sense that it was a really long book. You know, it really kind of went on for a while.
Yes. A lot,
but
like,
it was
like
not,
a Green
not
Lantern,
in a bad,
very wordy.
Yeah, not in
yeah.
a bad way at all, but, you know, you're so used to so many books I go through. I can go through most comic books in 6-7 minutes, tops.
Right.
And this one, you know, was pretty lengthy. But like I said, in a good way, because it was really entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's funny. They Dark Visions. I was in the store. Now, when did I buy Dark Visions? When did that come out? 2 weeks ago? A week ago?
It came out last week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was in the store. I'm in the store a bunch, and he goes, "Did you read Doc Visions yet?" One Alexander there, he goes, "Did you read Doc Visions?" I go, "Almost. I'm like a quarter of the way through it." And he goes, "How are you a quarter of the way?" That's like you're literally being 2 minutes into a book.
Right, right. I read it for 1 minute and I stopped.
But I said I keep getting interrupted, and I do. And you said that to me earlier tonight before we started recording. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know, but I keep getting pulled away by different things. And it's like I literally have a bookmark for my comics, and I'm like, these take 7 minutes. I can't sit down for 7 minutes.
Comics are like bottles of wine. fine. You don't put corks back in, and you don't put bookmarks in them.
I know.
Like, I have never not finished. I don't even know what a Wine Stopper's purpose is. I have never opened a bottle and not finished the whole thing. You only get about 2 glasses out of a bottle of wine anyway. So.
How big are your glasses?
Just regular. That's what my mother says, too. It's like, when I say that, she's like, how big are your glasses? I was like, I don't know. Just a regular glass.
You're not
glass.
Supposed to fill to the top of half a wine a bottle, glass. I you guess. Know that, right?
No. Honestly, we have 2 wine glasses for my wife and I, and we both get about a little over 2/3 of a glass out of a bottle, and that's it. So.
Well, see, you're already above me. You're saying bottle. I drink a box.
Yeah. Wine, two liters, yeah. 2 liter wine glass.
Oh, yeah. You put it on the edge of the counter with a little spout underneath. Good to go. Oh, all right. All right. Is that it for books for this week?
I think so.
You ready to get into some Captain Marvel spoilers?
Pull up this tweet. I have a tweet that I saved that I actually want to read. Because, you know, we mentioned it earlier, and this, before we get into the spoilers, you know, obviously there's a lot of controversy and, you know.
Do I have to sound the alarm?
I don't want to curse. No, but I mean, there's a lot of crap going on around this movie. You know, we talked last week about the Rotten Tomatoes thing and all that stuff, but Pat Sajak, of all people, out a tweet this week. For those that don't know, Pat Sajak used to host Wheel of Fortune.
He still does.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's been a while since I've seen Wheel of Fortune. But yeah. He put out a tweet, and not specifically referencing Captain Marvel, but there's no kind of denying that this was on his mind when he put it out. And I just...
Oh, God.
I really found it interesting. So I'm going to read it word for word in you know, what he wrote. So he says, I remember a time when you could enjoy or not enjoy a movie based on its merits. Now we have to worry about the politics of casting, the social implications of the film, and even the validity of the reviewing process. The joy is being sucked out of pretty much everything. End quote.
Ugh.
So I couldn't agree with that more.
Yeah,
whether it's in regards to Captain Marvel or Star Wars 9 or Star Wars The Last Jedi or,
right,
you know, whatever the next cause is that, you know, people jump on with, whatever the next movie is that comes out, I you know, just the amount of stuff I read this week, even after the movie came out, of not even truthful statements from people just complaining about this and that and the other thing. And it really just, I don't know, grinds my gears.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
To quote Peter Griffin.
Yeah. Here's the thing is it's just, that's just obnoxious when people are tearing down a movie because, and they haven't even seen it, and people are misinterpreting what actors are saying, in this case, Brie Larson, and we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, and it's, you know, she wasn't saying that the movie's not for white guys. She wasn't saying anything like that. I'm a white guy. You're a white guy. I understand completely what she was saying. It's just ridiculous. People are looking for something to get upset about. And they're looking to be, what's the term now, triggered or whatever.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. And as far as the politics of a movie, that actually doesn't bother me at all. It's, you know, and actually the people that are bashing the movies, they're really doing let me compartmentalize this for a second. The people that bashed the movie before they saw it, all they did was ruin Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
They just basically invalidated Rotten Tomatoes. And Rotten Tomatoes is trying to, you know, save face here and revamp things because people manipulated their system, which was a decent system, but they decided to, for what reason, whether it was Last Jedi or Captain Marvel, it's, people are trying to do something here, and it's just stupid. So that, to me, that's just entertainment. That makes me laugh because look at the dollars that have gone into the movie since then.
Well, and I was going to say, like you and I both, like we both predicted last week, no dent was made in the performance of this movie at the box office.
No.
It made all the money, just like we all knew that it would.
Right.
And it's going to do just fine. The negative smear campaign had no impact at all on the general public going to see this movie.
No. And if anything, I think a lot of times it actually does the exact opposite of what the people expect because it actually raises awareness and people, it can't be that bad. What the hell are they talking about? And people go and see it. Not that people weren't going to go see this anyways, but that's done. That to me is it's going to happen. It happened before. It'll happen again. It's just entertainment. It's fodder. It's funny. Who cares? The politicizing of a movie after you see it, that's fine. I don't mind that at all because it's like we say with comics or any kind of art, what you get out of something is what your perception is. It's what does that do for you? What do you see in that? And people are seeing all sorts of things in Captain Marvel that are either getting them upset about something, which is fine. Guess what, people? It's a movie. It's a piece of art. It's meant to invoke things. So, fine. Get upset about it. But you saw the movie, and that's your take. You have every right to be happy about it. You have every right to be mad about it. Whatever your take is, at least you saw it, and you have a take on it. Whether I agree with you or not, that's something to be handled on Twitter or something like that. But, you know, but it's, I have no problem with that. And for people that are saying it's like, oh, look at what it, the Skrulls are, we're into spoilers here anyways. You know, the Skrulls are now, refugees and it's this whole thing with what's going on in the country now, and it's this message, and some people are happy about this message, and other people are pissed off about this message. Well, you know what? It could also be the same story of Moses leading the Jews through the desert. It's, you know, it's whatever you want to say it is. And it doesn't necessarily have to take place today. If that's what you took out of it, great. But it's, you know, it's a story, and we're going to talk more about the story, and it actually does pertain to a lot of stuff that has happened in Marvel in the past.
Right.
So.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't, you know, obviously neither one of us work for Marvel. We're not shills for Marvel. We don't get paid to like the movie. So
we'd probably be docked pay the amount we talk about DC Universe.
I don't care if everybody likes the movie or they don't like it. That's really not relevant because, like you said, not everybody has to, number one, share my opinion, or number two, like the movie. Like, you know, it doesn't matter to me if everybody dislikes it. As long as I liked it, that's all that really matters to me. But I don't know. It's, to me, the reading of so much stuff into this movie just for the sake of getting bent out of shape about something, like sometimes a shoe is just a shoe, you know, it's like
right.
Not everything is a social agenda, not everything is politically motivated, and I think there's so many things that are just being brought out just so people can have something to be bent out of shape about, or you know, butthurt is the term that everybody likes to use now on the internet, but I just don't see, like I said, I didn't see all this stuff in the movie, honestly. I find more of that stuff on the CW, to be honest with you, in the Arrowverse than I did in this movie.
Yeah.
So
anyways, so what did you think of, speaking of the Skrulls, what did you think of the Skrulls being the sympathetic
character? Yeah, I didn't love that. I didn't love it, to be honest with you. There are some changes to the, you know, there were some fundamental changes to the story that I didn't love overall. I can see from a movie perspective why they, you know, I can understand from a storytelling standpoint why they did what they did. You know, you've got this Skrull and the Kree who've been at war for generations, you know, so obviously in any war, one side is, you know, usually more dominant than the other. And in this case, they chose to make the Kree kind of, you know, the dominating force, and the Skrulls are kind of on their back foot and running for their lives. But it was a huge change from the Skrulls that we've grown up with for the last 40 years.
But actually,
in the comics, actually
talking, and I've talked with a few people about it, there's actually a case for the Skrulls when they first came out. They were that refugee. In the first, I read it today, the first Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four issue 2, it is the first issue of the Skrulls showing up, and they show up to Earth and take over. They impersonate Fantastic Four to try and take over Earth, to use Earth to settle on.
Right, right. But they're refugees, but they're not here on Earth to be friendly with us.
No,
you know,
but
they're here to take over.
Right,
you
but
know.
By the end of the story, they are friendly, and they end up settling here. Three of them do, and they turn it. They take the form of cows. Fantastic Four told them they had to be the form of cows, and they could settle here. And then I was actually told that there's actually a second part to that that takes place. The story is in the 90s that there's a issue with the dairy products.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, they come back to that part of the story. But yeah, so like the first incarnation of the Skrulls is actually kind of that. Exactly what they were, and that's like kind of the way this movie went, where they were perceived as evil at the beginning, and then it kind of flipped on itself, and it, you know, loosely played, it seems to be loosely played off of this story in Fantastic Four. So I didn't mind it. I thought it was actually pretty cool, without even knowing any of that. I thought it was pretty cool because, yeah, I thought they were evil. And right. I thought it was a cool play. Like, it tricked me. So, you know what I mean? So, it,
well,
if,
right. like
if
said,
it doesn't
from,
do that, it's not as exciting of a movie to me.
From a storytelling standpoint, like I said, I understand, you know, because it was definitely something that nobody expected. You know, everybody
right.
knows the Skrulls. Everybody knows the Skrulls are the bad guys. We all kind of thought this was leading into, like, Secret Invasion. You know, this. You know, there was a miniseries called Secret Invasion. It
right.
was an event. You know, where basically the Skrulls, just like it says, were, you know, infiltrating and invading. And it seemed like that's what they were going to set up with Captain Marvel. And maybe we would get somewhere along that storyline going forward in Phase 4. There's no way that can happen now because they've turned the Skrulls into a much more sympathetic race. And also, spoilers, they're not on Earth anymore, right? She's taken them to
right.
find a new home. So but, it would not make sense now to come back and do an invasion story of Earth. Like, why would they be coming back and trying to invade? So
right.
I think that that's, you know, not where we're going to end up.
So
know, with them.
As a side story here to this, like what you're talking about, where we're going to go in the future of the MCU. We're kind of jumping ahead here because we're still talking Captain Marvel some more. Have you been told? I heard this in one store. I went to another store, asked them. They didn't know. And then a third store said, yes, they've heard this. Stores have been recommended to push Avengers Forever because of the movies. They think that's where the stories are going. So that was
no.
my recommended. That was my next recommended reading is Avengers Forever, which was from 98 to 99. I think it was 12 series run. And it deals with I picked it up. I started it. It's awesome. It's a blast. And it deals with time travel. It deals with all of these things that are going to be that are going to be coming up, and could be the next part after Endgame. It may actually have something to do with Endgame.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't. There's so no official word. Like, Marvel's never going to come out and tell you, hey, this is our plans for the MCU, so push these comics. So anywhere this might be coming from is fan-driven, I think.
This wasn't a fan. This was...
But it's speculation. It's fan-driven speculation. There's no official Marvel announcement that I've seen anyways.
No. Well, this is why I'm not saying what stores it is. This was kind of like a one of those things that they say, like, hey, you know what I mean? This isn't on Twitter. This isn't one of those things. I don't want to say who said it because the way it was described to me is it was like almost like something you tell, hey, have your customers lean towards this because, and it was told to them by Marvel themselves. And I don't, you know, I know we're not a huge podcast and it's going to get out there, but you know what I mean?
Well, I mean,
I don't want to out anybody or anything like that. But hey, if it comes true and we start, I'm going to read the book. And if it comes true, hey, this source has been pretty reliable to me in the past. So not that we have a huge history, but let's see, you know, can't hurt to see because it's a good story so far. Have you read it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay.
I don't think I've read it. I may have read it years ago. I'd have to look at it.
I definitely didn't because I was way out of the game at the time.
You know, once again, we don't know. I mean, I can't definitively say it is not, but I know that there is no way that, Kevin Feige has released his plans for Phase 4 to anybody in the general public. I'm not even sure if the comics division of Marvel knows what the movie division of Marvel has planned. So any information, I mean, it would have to be deep, deep inside information. And I'm not saying that whoever store it is can't have that because, you know, I don't know who knows who, but I've not seen anything.
Yeah.
You know, saying to push that or I haven't even seen it really in the speculator pages or anything. So it's news to me.
Yeah. No, but that I figured I'd pass it on, read the book, and
hey,
see where the future
else,
goes.
If nothing else, pick up the trade paperback for Avengers Forever, sold at Arkham Comics and Games in Paraland. Online at www.arkhamcomicsandgames.com. I'll make sure to have them in stock.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, no, I don't know. But,
yeah.
Hey, like I said, it can't hurt to pick it up and read it. So.
Right. Yeah, and then, hey, maybe it just gives us some tips on something else that's coming up.
Right.
But anyways, back to Captain Marvel. So what were you saying? Skrulls. You know what I wanted to talk about? We were talking about some Easter eggs and stuff.
Yeah.
Did you notice all of the Arnold Schwarzenegger references in the backgrounds? I mean, when she crashes in the Blockbuster.
Really.
When she crashes into the Blockbuster, the first thing she shoots, she shoots Arnold from
True Lies.
The True Lies cutout. She shoots Arnold and leaves Jamie Lee Curtis standing there.
Right.
But then when
she's because she hates men.
Exactly. So. I did think that, and I was like, oh, here we go. Yeah. So when
I was looking to get Ben out of shape about something, I'd be tweeting right now.
Yeah, exactly. So then when she's walking down the aisle, what was the movie he did with the kid where he was the Last Action Hero, I think it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Was in the background.
Okay.
It was one of the movies in the background. And she picked up the right, it was when she was picking up the right stuff. You saw that when she picked up that movie?
Right, I saw that.
Okay, so like over...
That's not her, Arnold, though. But.
No, I know, but over her, what is her left shoulder, you can see Last Action Hero.
Okay.
And it was there the whole time. Like, they kind of centered on that, and she walked past, and it stayed there, which I thought was weird. But the other part that I thought was the way she was acting in that movie seemed to me a lot like Sarah Connor, how she was... Very like Terminator like. Remember when I was saying a couple weeks ago about Sarah Connor acting like a Terminator in Terminator 2? Well, I felt like in this one, she was almost acting like a Terminator. The way she was moving her body, the way she was turning, the way she was being very like stoic, just be, you know what I mean? And then when her humor did come out, speaking of that, can get us into the Stan Lee cameo. That was like in the Stan Lee cameo, they say like she broke character to smile right. In that cameo. And so like most of the movie, she was more like a Terminator and more acting like Arnold, acting like a Terminator. And I didn't know if that was on purpose. That's kind of how I read it. And there were other Arnold references that I saw that I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, that was just a take that I had. Obviously, I didn't see that anywhere. That might just be me.
Right.
But
I mean, I didn't pick up. I definitely saw the, you know, the standee of True Lies and
right.
where she shot him. But excuse me, I didn't notice the other references. But like I kind of said earlier, there was a lot of love letters in this movie.
Yeah.
To a lot of other 90s.
Well, blowing away Arnold Schwarzenegger is not exactly a love letter.
Well, no, but you
but
know, if
is.
We're
yeah.
if right, if we're referencing Arnold, I mean, who was a bigger action hero in the 90s than Arnold? I mean, Arnold and Sylvester Stallone were kind of like our two big action heroes in the 90s.
Right.
And then, you know, we've already mentioned, you know, there were several Pulp Fiction references in the movie. You know, obviously Sam Jackson was was in Pulp Fiction. But then we had the big Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's sitting there on the bus and he's practicing his lines and reading the script from Mallrats.
Right.
So, you know, and also a huge, you know, 90s franchise, I guess, was all the View Askew Kevin Smith movies. To me, that was so completely unexpected to me. Like, definitely my favorite. Well, I don't know. I guess it's hard to beat Stan's cameo in from Spider-Verse, but I think this is really one of my favorite Stan Lee cameos, really more because of that, you know, kind of breaking the fourth wall, because if he's sitting there on the bus practicing for Mallrats to play Stan Lee, that means he is Stan Lee.
Right.
And you know, in most of his other cameos, you don't get the sense that he's Stan Lee. He's just another guy. But, you know, obviously on the bus, he's Stan Lee. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not to go way off track, but we're very remiss. Like, we need to go way back to the beginning of the movie and talk about Stan Lee.
Yeah, that was – I can't wait for the Blu-ray, DVD, whatever.
Yeah.
Just – I want to freeze – because supposedly it's got all of his cameos in there or
something.
And then
it was
some.
Hard to pick them all out, you know, as it happened. But,
yeah.
You know, obviously, you know – I mean, if you listen to this, you've seen the movie, so I don't –
Well, yeah, we're in spoilers now.
Anybody.
Yeah,
right. But, you know, obviously there was a big tribute to Stan. You know, they kind of did away with their normal Marvel intro to do
right.
like the Stan Lee intro
just,
into the Marvel letters.
Yeah, it's all Stan Lee. There was actually a few in there that weren't cameos. They were actually just appearances. Like I saw one with him and Robert Downey Jr. Just standing together. But it wasn't from like the scene from a movie or something. It was like
an
after
like
party or something.
Or,
yeah. But yeah, that was when the movie opened. I thought was shocking. You know, I think I was doing something like situating my popcorn or something, and my wife was like, "Oh!" I looked up and I was like, "Oh wow!" And so I missed the very very beginning of it, like literally the first second and a half. So I saw the movie again and made sure, like, you know, locked my eyes on that. And
had heard there was a tribute to Stan at the beginning of the movie before I went in, but I still wasn't quite ready for it.
No,
you know?
No. And I heard the same thing. And I heard
it definitely brought out all the feels.
Yeah. I had heard the same thing, and I had heard it was emotional. So I thought we were going to get like him, like, and Brie Larson talking or something.
I kind of did too. It's not exactly what I expected, but it was perfect. I mean, it didn't need to be anything else.
Right. And then when you see what it was, I was like, oh, this is all the, yeah, it is all the feels.
Yeah.
You know, and then the actual cameo, it's with, you know, have you seen the Kevin Smith video that he did about it?
I didn't watch the video, but I saw, you know, he posted a picture and then did
retweeted it yesterday.
I read his Facebook tweet or his Facebook post rather talking about it and like the picture that he put up, but I didn't watch his video. But I know that, you know, you could see the tears in his eyes when he walked out, because obviously he didn't know.
No, he did.
Like,
that's why you got to watch the video.
Oh, okay.
He knew. So
no, I didn't think it came off to me like he was surprised by it.
No, and that's what's great. That's why I say you got to watch the video. I'll tell you about it, but you still watch the video, because he does. He gets tears in his eyes when he's talking about it.
Yeah.
And he so the first time he saw the movie twice, I know that, because I saw it. He tweeted out when he saw it the second time with his daughter.
Right.
They both started crying again.
Right.
But the first time he saw it with his wife. And yeah, he did know about it. definitely get the find the video. I tweeted it out yesterday. I'll probably tweet it out again tomorrow. I'll watch it, or I'll find it and tweet it out again. But he says, like, that whole part, the trust me, true believer, the line that Stan Lee says, Kevin Feige asked him, do you have some old recordings of that? Because they needed, and that's why it sounds, when you see it, it sounds even a little bit different. But I guess they, you know, he says in the video that Stan was weak. Kevin Feige says he was weak at the time. It's the voice didn't come through right. He, you know, it was only a few months before he actually passed. So they asked him. So he knew ahead of time. And he said when Kevin Feige called him, he said he started crying. He's like, because he told him what he was going to do. He goes, but you can't tell anybody. And he's like,
yeah,
which is
hard for Kevin.
Right. So he's known about it. And he's like, and it was funny because before he saw the movie, he's like, he saw the tweets from people saying like, oh, I can't wait for you to see the movie.
Right.
And he's like, I know, but he said he was still like blown away. And, you know, like I tweeted out the other day, I was like, he's like a normal guy. You know,
right?
For you know,
right? I don't consider him a celebrity, even though he is. Like, he seems like if you could just walk up to him and start talking to him,
right?
And maybe it's just because I listen to, you know, 10 hours a week of Kevin Smith podcasts, and I feel like he's my best friend, even though I've never met him. But
he's like a normal guy, and like it you know, be like any one of us, all of a sudden being like, huh, you know. You're getting put back into the movies that you were,
right?
You know, just that you adored growing up.
And I don't know, and I haven't watched the video, but I almost get the sense that was probably Stan's idea to put that in, you know, because Stan had a big affection for Kevin Smith.
I guess
that might have been something he pushed for.
Yeah,
to be in the movie. I don't know. It could have been Kevin Feige's idea, but it felt to me like that was something Stan probably pushed for.
Am I wrong in that I think Kevin Smith was the first person to put Stan Lee in a cameo as Stan Lee like that in that movie?
I think that's right, yeah.
So that's, you know, and that was, you know, obviously Stan Lee had been in other stuff before that. He had been in his, you know, comics and the cartoons, his voiceovers and stuff like that. But yeah, he was actually, that was the first time that he was put in as a cameo of, and he was playing himself. But it's, so he obviously, like you said, he had an affection for Kevin Smith too.
Right.
So, but yeah, that was, that, you know, that was pretty emotional seeing that in the movie.
Right.
You know, and understanding what that was. And then it's the fun, I don't know about you, but when you see it, you're like, Mallrats, and then you're like, that was in 95. Oh my god, you start doing the math and you forget, like, this movie takes place in the 90s, blah blah blah, and you're just
like
watching
he was probably on his way to the audition
and then it hits home that you're like, oh, this is in the 90s, I forgot this whole thing's taking place in the 90s. So yeah, I thought that was amazing. So all right, speaking of other 90s things, how about the computers and all the little references they made?
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. So, Goose the Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about him?
That's another one of, that is one of my pet peeves.
Did they change the name?
No, not at all. I love that. I love that they changed it because I thought it was so fitting. you know, it's another, all they did is they took another co-pilot.
Right. They changed from one co-pilot to another.
I think we said that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. But ever since months and months ago, when they came out with the poster with a cat on it, and these people that are coming out, this is a pet peeve of mine, the people that are coming out saying, oh, come on, you know the movie's going to fail when it's based around a cat. And you're like, well, first off, it's not based around a cat. And second off, it's not a cat.
Right.
If you know, and it's like, you got to, please, people, see the movie. And it, I thought the cat was great. The Flurkin, you know.
Flurkin.
Yeah, and you know through the whole movie that, and it's actually, it's Mar-Vell's cat.
Right.
You know, which was, you know, everybody keeps, I guess it's Carol's now, but you don't really know, because actually it's not even hers. It didn't
No, it's Fury's, really.
Yeah, now it's Fury's. It was never Carol's. It was Mar-Vell's, and now it's Fury's. The only thing I wish is, I wish that had shown the cat had been in, like, just in the background of other movies,
right?
Just walking by, and we never, you know what I mean. And I'm wondering if you go start watching these movies.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe he was,
you know. And it's like, so supposedly I heard this. When I watched the movie, I thought that was the case, but it didn't exactly look the same from above or the same idea, but. Where they infiltrated, you know, when he did his thumbprint and stuff, when he took Carol Danvers to Project Pegasus, that's the same place as the first Avengers movie, supposedly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd have to look at it again. I don't know.
So, you know, when you see him driving in, and it's like he drives in the road, the rocks around, that's supposed to be, I guess... I thought I heard that. I was thinking it when I saw it, and I've since heard that. I can't remember where. It might have been in a store. It might have been on Twitter. I thought I verbally heard it, though. But that's supposed to be the same place from the Avengers movie that eventually becomes the Avengers, you know, base or whatever, where they do all that stuff.
It might be. Like I said, I'd have to go back and rewatch. You know, and see if I could put them side by side. But I'm sure if I just Googled it, it's probably online already. But
right. What'd you think of Mar-Vell?
Well, that's a little pet peeve of mine, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't like the change necessarily to Mar-Vell either. And it's not, I don't care that they made him a woman. You know, obviously Annette Bening was Mar-Vell. Even though through the whole movie, until that reveal, you think it's Jude Law, it turns out to not be.
Right.
But, you know, that was just such a big change to the story. You know, I don't know why they had to change it to what they did. Like, they could have followed the comic version of Mar-Vell closely or more closely and still had Carol get her powers the way she got them in the comics. And it wouldn't have really changed the story too much at all. But, you know, changing Mar-Vell from basically a Kree warrior to a scientist that's, you know, basically trying to come up with a quantum drive or whatever they called it, faster than light drive or whatever it was. I don't know. I don't know why that had to happen. Like, why did they have to develop this drive so Carol could get her powers from that explosion rather than just, you know, getting them from Mar-Vell in the first place, which is how it happened in the comics.
Well, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't, I mean, it works the way they did it, and that's fine, but it also could have worked if they would have followed it more closely to the comics.
But if we know anything else, though, they very rarely follow that closely to the comics, because they want even the comic reader to still be able to enjoy, be like, whoa, you know, be shocked or something.
Right.
So that's why that didn't bother me. The fact that she got her powers the way she did didn't bother me, because it's, you know, kind of in the way of like a Bill Belichick. You don't understand what he's doing, but you got to know in the end it's gonna be for the better.
You right.
know, it's like, and that Marvel's that this is their 21st movie, and there's not a lot of stuff that you go, huh, why did they do that? And then years later, you go, that's why they did it.
Well,
and
one of the
something
things that
plays into it.
Well, one of the things I read that really makes sense that they could point to why they did this is that, you know, so obviously the drive that explodes giving Carol her powers was based off the Tesseract, which which held one of the Infinity Stones. So now Carol has been infused with the powers of one of the Infinity Stones.
Right, the Space Stone.
Right. And so that's going to give her an edge, obviously, when she faces Thanos later.
I was like, have I been saying it wrong all this time?
No, it's Thanos. I just said it wrong. Tomato, tomato.
Well, that's how much I respect you and your knowledge. I'm
right. I just start saying things wrong, and all of a sudden you're like, I've been wrong my whole life.
Yeah.
But, you know, so obviously that could play a part in, you know, her defeating Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet if she's basically infused with the power.
I think we should start calling him Thanos.
Thanos, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Thanos.
Yeah. So I, you know, when I read that, you know, obviously that makes sense, but that makes sense in only in the vein of how she's going to interact with Endgame. It doesn't really make sense to her whole, you know, existence in the MCU. And I don't know. Like I said, it was one of my pet peeves. Like, you know, they changed the Skrulls, they changed Mar-Vell, they changed how she gets her powers.
Right.
And a lot of these were seemingly, like, I can understand the Skrulls because you have to have a sympathetic character or characters in any movie. But they could have left the Mar-Vell thing alone and not really changed the outcome of the movie.
They said, Kevin Feige, I read a thing today or yesterday in that he was saying that it was actually director Anna Boden. It was her idea to change the gender and then bring in Annette Bening. You know, first she was like, why don't we do a woman? It was her idea, but then a bunch of people jumped onto it and were like, and Kevin Feige was one of them. He's like, yeah, let's do this and that. And then they brought in Annette Bening, and then that changed because they were originally trying to think of the idea came about when they were trying to cast Mar-Vell as a male. And they were like, well, what if we did this? And then, because then that goes into the
but that's almost saying
what, supreme intelligence,
right? But that's almost saying that you can't cast a female to be a kick-ass Kree warrior, and you still could have. Like, it doesn't bother me that they changed him from a male to a female,
right?
It just bothers me that they're saying, well, we can't have a female and also have her be this great warrior. She has to be a scientist.
Yeah, but you don't know that she wasn't a great warrior as well. There could be a backstory there because she ended up here. She has the name of the scientist. That from the what's the story? Like, Mar-Vell ends up coming here and taking the name in the comics of the scientist.
Right.
He impersonates the scientist. So they could still backstory that exact story. Just have her be a woman. There's nothing saying. I mean, for her to actually get here, there's nothing saying she couldn't be a great warrior. Because it's not like she just, you know, she's a scientist, stole a ship and just flew to, like Earth, or what was it C-51? What's the name?
C-something.
Yeah. So that I didn't even think of any of that because I thought that it was still a possibility.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be. Again, like I said, you know, Mar-Vell was a hero on Earth prior to Carol.
Right.
You know, and...
And who knows how long she was here, because I want to know now what's the story on how she got the Tesseract?
Right.
Because we know, so
yeah,
far, we know
the
story. Got it out of the ocean when he was looking for Captain America.
Right.
So we know that, but then after that, what do we think? It was sitting in a vault? Apparently, right. She got a hold of it and was doing the whole, you know, Project Pegasus.
Right.
Which, that's one of the things from that I have seen on Twitter, that Project Pegasus is in Iron Man 2. They show on some boxes or something.
Right. That's the Stark connection. I hadn't seen it, but that would be the Stark connection.
Yep.
With the Tesseract.
But just that whole project's going on. Then there was, we can get into that in a minute. I was going to say Rambo.
Oh, yeah.
Monica Rambo.
Right. Well, Maria Monica Rambo. Monica turns out to be the daughter.
She is a daughter in real life. Actually, the names actually all line up.
Well, no, but Monica is who was Captain Marvel in the comics is the name of the little girl.
Correct.
The daughter, not the mother. Right. Because you think from the previews that it's going to be the mother.
Right.
But I kept thinking, I forget what the mother's name was, but it wasn't Monica. You know,
Maria.
Maria.
And Maria.
It's not Maria, it's Monica. And then all of a sudden they introduce the little girl. But that makes sense because when we see Carol again, it's obviously going to be at Endgame and it's going to be in 2019.
Right.
So now the little girl will be basically 30 years old.
35 years old.
And she could be, you know, a hero.
Right. Well, in 95, she was 11 years old.
Right.
And so in this one, she was 11 in 95. She's going to be 35 years old this year. So... the one thing that it didn't bug me, but I was like, why did she, I know why she called her Lieutenant when Carol was talking to her. She's like, Lieutenant, I think it was like Trudeau. I can't remember what she called her. Ever since she was a little girl, she called her Lieutenant, like, and she had this second name for her. It wasn't Rambo. It began with a T. But I couldn't figure out what kind of reference that was, if any. I know what the lieutenant is, but I couldn't figure out the second name.
I don't know. I don't remember any of that, to be honest with you.
Well, the lieutenant is what she is in the the harbor patrol or whatever when she becomes Captain Marvel or gets the powers the first time.
Right.
She gets them before Carol Danvers, but not in this. Right. Not in this story.
Well, not in this story, but in the comics, obviously, Monica Rambeau was Captain Marvel before Carol Danvers.
Yeah. and she, what is it, Phaser? It's her mother's call sign, too.
I don't know. I don't know what you're trying to say.
What was another name that she had instead of Captain Marvel?
I don't remember. You're gonna make me lie. I don't know.
Oh, jeez. It's here. Let me look it up.
I say, if only we had something at our fingertips that we could look it up.
Photon.
Yeah.
Photon. I knew it was a PH. So that's her mother's call sign on her jet, and she's. That's another name that Monica Rambeau was when she, instead of being Captain Marvel, she was actually Photon as well. Right. So I have a feeling that maybe that's what we'll see in Endgame.
Well, right, because obviously she won't call herself Captain Marvel because we'll already have Captain Marvel.
Well,
but I wouldn't be surprised to see Monica in the future have powers. We probably won't see it in Endgame, I don't think. But
well, here's something else, though. We just had the movie Captain Marvel, but nobody was called Captain Marvel in the movie. Carol Danvers was never called Captain Marvel.
Oh,
she still hasn't taken the name yet. And we know, like, remember when Monica, the little girl, was going through her suit and giving her new colors?
Yeah.
She went through all of Carol Danvers' colors.
Right.
Or Captain Marvel's she went through the original green and white, which was the first, and then she wore the black and gold, which was Miss Marvel, you know. So she, as she's flipping through them, she got the different suits, and she hasn't really decided. For all, I mean, we saw obviously in the mid-credit scene, she comes back in the blue suit, so it's not like she's going to show up as Ms. Marvel. But you never know. By the end of the movie, by the end of Endgame, she might not be. She might be Ms. Marvel, and maybe the Monica is Captain Marvel.
I think you're reaching, to be honest with you. I'm
sure that's what we're here for.
Yeah, Carol is Captain Marvel. Again, I've only seen it once, so I can't. I don't remember all the little details. I'll take your word for it that nobody ever calls her Captain Marvel. I don't really remember.
The closest they come to it is when her and Fury are standing in the kitchen and they're talking about Mar-Vell, and she's like, her name was Mar-Vell, and she's like, it's two words, and he's like, Marvel sounds better, but they never say Captain Marvel.
Right.
You just know she's the only thing you know about her name is that at the end when he's typing and he saw that her call sign was Avenger.
Right.
And the only name reference to her other than Carol Danvers. And even to the point that her friend Maria, everybody keeps telling her, you're Carol Danvers.
Right.
You're Carol Danvers. Nobody ever says Captain Marvel in the entire movie. It's called Captain Marvel, but nobody has ever called Captain Marvel.
Right.
Which is pretty funny. So, what else? What else?
Well, you had, another big change that happened in this movie was, you know, Fury losing his eye, you know, that's not
no,
the way
he's,
it happens.
He's lost
in the comics.
His eye.
Yeah, that's not the way it happens in the comics. You know, the way it happens in this movie, which I thought was pretty funny, I guess.
Right.
But again, just seemed like a change to make a change.
Yeah. And I thought it was fun. Yeah. It was, you know, it was fun. It was funny.
But his relationship with that cat through the whole movie, to me, seemed out of character, to be honest with you. Nowhere in the MCU did you see Nick Fury happy or, you know, joking around. But it's like he lit up every time he saw this cat, you know, and he's talking baby talk to the cat. And, you know,
yeah, but he's also a younger Nick Fury that's not as hardened.
Right, yeah, obviously he hasn't seen everything that he's going to see later on. But I don't know, I just thought it was funny, but a little out of character for Fury.
But that, I mean, that's fine, because he hasn't, I mean, that's Nick Fury in the 90s. So that's we hadn't seen that character, so it's hard to say it's out of character. One of the things that I liked is on Twitter, people are talking about, like, how, well, this whole scene, and then they show the scene when he says, the last time I trusted somebody, I lost an eye. Right. And they're like, so that's meaningless, because, you know, and then...
Well, he trusted the cat, I guess.
Well, that was...
the flurkin.
Right. That's what somebody had as the first comeback was, well, yeah, he trusted the cat, and the cat, you know, the flurkin wasn't a cat.
Right.
And so, but then I thought somebody had a really good comeback, because they took a screen grab of Avengers and they said, look, we all know Fury's going to lie to make a point. And the screen grab was Coulson's Captain America bloody cards.
Right.
When he had thrown them down on the table and said he died with these in his pocket. And then Hill, Maria Hill, called him on it and said, those were in his locker. And then in Fury goes, well, they needed a push. You know, so he lied to them. Not only did he lie to them, he went and put blood on them because they were in his locker. So it's not below him to lie to make a point. And later, you know, for him to say that he got scratched, you know, whatever happened to his eye was that's really being nitpicky.
Right.
you're like, oh, that's the continuity of the movies are all ruined now. No, I don't think so.
Here's what I'm a little curious about, and I guess you could just chalk this up to Carol's powers that we don't necessarily understand, you know, fully. But, you know, between 1995 and now, there's what, 24 years of time that have passed, and she hasn't aged a single day between this movie and
her hair got longer.
Well, her hair got longer, but
and she got shoulder pads.
Yeah, but I mean, she looks exactly the same. So, like, nowhere really in her powers in the comics does it talk about her having a slower metabolism or her aging being different. So I'm curious if they reference that at all in Endgame.
Well,
you know, why she, although I don't know who they'd reference it to, because none of the people she's going to meet in Endgame have ever met her before. But
right.
I thought it was odd that she looks exactly the same. You know, we see that in Wonder Woman also, but Wonder Woman's an immortal, you know,
right.
She goes from the 40s to the 2018s and looks exactly the same. But I think, you know, when they chose to put this as a period movie in the 90s, they knew full well that she was going to show up again in 2019. But
right. But what's to say she doesn't age, though? She didn't age in the comics.
Well, but
she
the thing is,
she doesn't get older.
Right. But there is a distinct in the comics. Comics are ageless, right? Like, characters just keep getting updated
exactly.
for the times. But in this movie, there is clearly a 1995 to 2019. Time works.
Right.
Time doesn't work in the same way. In the comics, Superman's been 28 since 1930. Like, it's always the same time period. You know, it's not like he changes. But there's clearly 1995 to 2019. You can't say there wasn't 24 years that passed, because
right.
they absolutely did. Because Nick Fury got older.
Right, but he also
if you
didn't
assume
get affected
she's,
with that.
Right,
know.
That's what I'm saying. But you have to assume that she's 28 to 30 years old in this movie.
Right.
Which would put her in her 50s, almost 60 years old.
But
now.
Then again, I mean, Captain America hasn't aged either.
Right, but he was frozen in a block of ice. Like,
but he still hasn't aged since coming to. You know, I know it's been only a few years, but I mean,
right.
He's,
but you could say that you can't. Somebody looks the same in a 5 or 6 year span
Bucky
of time.
Hasn't aged.
We look the same. You know, I don't know. Like, we're really going too far into this, but. To me, it's just
not what we do.
She doesn't look like she's 60 years old.
Do you want to get into?
She looks like she's 30 years old still. You know,
is an elevator worthy?
No, I'm just saying. Like, it seems weird that she wouldn't have aged at all. We are just assuming that it has something to do with the fact that she was transfused with Mar-Vell's blood, or not Mar-Vell, but you know, she was transfused with Kree blood. Or something to do with the explosion. I mean, there has to be some way they're going to explain the
See,
fact
I don't
that
know
she
if
hasn't
she was transfused.
No, they
I
say she
even,
was. Yeah, he said Jude Law
yeah,
says she was.
Yeah, but they're lying.
Yeah, but but she bled blue. I mean, she had blue blood coming out of her nose.
Yeah, but didn't she do that right after the explosion too? Before he could even do that to her?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
It had to be. Like, she was definitely had a transfusion with Kree blood because she had blue blood in her.
Yeah, but the explosion might have sent done the same thing. It might have transfused her with Mar-Vell right there and turned her into a Kree and gave her Kree blood after the explosion. I don't trust anything that, you know, Jude Law's character said.
No,
because
but
you know
what
he also said that they could take her powers away, and they can't. Remember, he kept telling her, "What is given to you can be taken away."
Right, but that's a mind game.
She
can see the blood when she bleeds. That's not a mind game. She can see
right,
it.
But all she's seeing is she's bleeding blue or green or whatever it was. But he's saying, "I gave that to you." That's my blood coursing through your veins.
Well, it's somebody.
He could be lying.
But
no,
it's somebody's.
It could have come from the explosion.
No, because this was when she was flashing back to her time on the Kree homeworld. This was well before the explosion happened. The explosion happens. You know,
that's how she gets there. The explosion happens on Earth, and then he kidnaps her after the explosion and brings her back.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't think that explosion turns her blood, changes the color of her blood, though. Yeah, I'm thinking more of the timeline in the movie than
right. Like, yeah. No.
But yeah, you're right.
The
you're
actual
right.
timeline is
yeah,
like
you're right. It happens first, but
right. And I think, if I remember right, she has a bloody nose after the explosion, and it's blue.
Yeah. So where does that come from?
I'd have to see.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from.
Well, because, I mean, you have Mar-Vell laying there in the explosion. You know, yeah. Mar-Vell's dead. She gets all this.
I don't know. The point is that she has some kind of Kree physiology from somebody or something that keeps her from aging. So we've gone way too long on the fact that she doesn't look 60 years old in this movie. It's not what I was trying. I wasn't trying to inspire this great debate. I was just saying that.
But look at what you've done.
Somehow, you know, she hasn't aged.
How old is Thanos?
He's timeless. I don't know. We don't have to. I will never ask again in any movie how old somebody is. I regret even bringing it up.
No, it's not that. It's me. I'll argue with you about anything.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Believe me.
What else? What else do we got?
Well, I mean, I feel like we've talked a lot about things surrounding the movie, but we really haven't talked much about the movie itself, like just the story and, like, I just feel like we haven't really talked about the movie. We've just talked about all the things surrounding.
All different
parts. Yeah, all different parts. But
so I thought the first time I saw the movie, I wasn't really sure about the beginning of it. I thought it was kind of slow.
Well, right, and that's...
I actually enjoyed the beginning of it more the second time I saw the movie. It was because I was paying attention, but I was looking for more stuff the first time, and the second time I was like, oh, okay. I thought it had a lot more information than I realized the first time.
Well, that's kind of what I felt about it too, is that there was felt like more setup than actual delivery, right? Which, if you go back and look at most of the Marvel movies, you know, the first standalone movie for almost any character, it's kind of the same formula that we've gotten for every single one of them. You know, it's a lot of build up and it's a lot of setup to not get a whole lot of payoff until the end. But for some reason, parts of that just kind of felt drawn out to me, and it felt very slow. And I feel like we didn't really get to see her showcase her powers as Captain Marvel really until the last act of the movie.
Which is kind of how it goes.
Right.
You know? You got the, you know, kind of like Captain America, you got the little bit of a scene there where, you know, Captain America chases the guy down and jumps into the water for the submarine.
Right.
And that's all you got until the end when he goes and saves everybody, puts his suit on and stuff. But same with, and I mean, basically the same thing she did. You got that opening scene where she runs around.
Right.
You know, after she crashes through the blockbuster or whatever, right, she runs around.
Punching old ladies.
Yeah. You got some humor in there with, you know, where she acts, and that's where I felt like she was acting like a Terminator, where she was answering Fury, like, matter of fact, and like, oh, wait, you don't know about this. You know, and I want to even say she did, like, the little head tilt, like, huh, what? You don't understand? But the second time I saw, so the first time you're like, this is kind of slow. When we get into the good stuff, right? The second time I saw it, I really felt like it was the movie was a really good, it made the audience feel like she felt. She didn't know what was going on. She didn't know her background. She doesn't know. So the second time you're seeing it, you know where the movie's going to go. You can pay attention to littler things. And it really felt like, the second time I saw it, it didn't seem nearly as slow.
It
really made you feel, I felt like it made you as in the audience feel like she felt the character of Carol Danvers feels like she doesn't know what's going to happen. She doesn't know where she's from, and you're getting the backstory here. And I thought it was a good, you know, build up. And then you get into, you know, you get into the whole middle second act there where you get the whole switcheroo
right.
of, you know, the good guys and bad guys.
I don't know. Like I said, having only seen it once, I know you've seen it twice now, but we both had the exact same reaction the next day. Like when you texted me and we both kind of answered, we both said the same thing. You know, liked it, didn't love it, parts of it felt kind of flat, you know, and it felt kind of slow. And
right.
You feel differently now because you've seen it again. I still have the same, like for me, it's still, like I said, I can't really put my finger on what didn't resonate for me, but going through it, it really until kind of the end where, you know, things start to speed up and you know, you start to get all the action. It felt a little drawn out to me and, like I said, a little slow.
See, I actually, honestly, I loved it the first time. I like it even more now. But when I said, like, when we were texting, I was more like, yeah, like you. It's kind of like a backhanded compliment when you say, well, it's not my favorite movie. But that doesn't come through on a text. Right. You know what I mean? It's not my favorite Marvel movie. Well, yeah. But that doesn't mean I didn't love it because I love all these Marvel movies. You know?
Right, right. So, and again, I'm not saying I didn't dislike it either, but
no,
like
I
said,
loved it.
Say it's a top 10 Marvel movie, and you would say, "Oh, well, it's only in the top 10." Well, that's like saying this $100 bill is 10th in the stack of $100 bills. Like these movies are all great, so
right.
Something has to be like you still have to have an order of what you enjoy more. So yeah. I'm not saying that this isn't a good movie. And like I said, I didn't like it, but it just didn't. Something about it just didn't have that same feel for me as a lot of the other. Like, cause go back to Iron Man, even the first Iron Man, same thing, right? Like, you don't really get Tony in the suit till the second half of the movie. There's a lot of build up in that movie too, but it didn't feel as, for some reason, it didn't feel as drawn out to me
so,
as this one seemed to.
That's funny you say that because Iron Man is one of my favorite movies. It's in like, I can't remember where I had it ranked. Don't kill me if I'm wrong, but I have it somewhere around 3.
Right.
You know, could be 2, could be, I don't know, but I'd have to look at the list, but it's always going to be high for me because it's the first one.
Well, right. It built.
And that's my reason.
Everything was built off of its back, you know,
but exactly. But the beginning of that movie, every time I watch it, from the moment after the Hummer gets attacked, the Humvee
right.
gets attacked, that for me is kind of slow.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it so many times.
Right.
Maybe Captain Marvel will do that as well. If, you know, once I get it in-house and start watching it a bunch.
Right.
But I got to tell you, it's like this movie, it may even go up for me because it's a woman, because it's a blonde woman, which my daughter is. I was sitting there in the movie watching it with my daughter and I'm looking at her and she's like, I could see it in her eyes. I'm a guy. So it's not that I don't pay attention to women wanting superheroes for themselves,
right?
But when you see it like that, you're like, oh wow. And it's, I mean, and that the line, every time I hear it now, like higher, farther, faster, baby, you know, the way she says it, I'm just right. Like, I love that line. And I the way she portrays herself, and it's like, you know, my daughter watching it, she was excited, she loves the movie. So, you know, it, you know, oh my God, that's a tangent. She's writing a paper on comics for her philosophy class.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, she sent it to me this week. If I could read you an excerpt, I read it and I sent my text back to her was like, okay, most of this went way over my head.
Right.
She's like quoting Plato. And I'm like going, and it all pertains. She's dead on.
Well,
but it was like, I was just like, oh my God. She's, it was so funny.
I will say though that it had one of the best moments from any of these movies that I've seen. You know, to me, I think one of my favorite moments from any of these comic book movies is the, you know, the no man's land scene in Wonder Woman. You know,
yes.
She rises up out of the trench and, you know, goes across that battlefield. And it's like,
I love that.
And, you know, again, I'm not a woman either, but it's such an empowering, it's such an empowering moment, you know, to see this character on screen like that. And, to me, it was one of the best moments I've ever seen. You know, kind of next you have in Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, you have that scene where, you know, Peter is buried underneath the building's collapsed on him and he's stuck down there. And, you know, it brings back from the comic books that it's a scene from a comic book where it's the same thing. Like, he has to get up. Like, Spider-Man always gets up, right? And so, to me, very empowering moment. So this movie had the same thing. You know, you have that little montage where, you know, she's figuring out who she is, and you see her as a little girl, you know, falling off her bike, and then, you know, falling off a skateboard, and falling off the rope when she's climbing. And it's the same thing. Like, she falls down, but she always gets back up. And I really love that scene in this movie. Again, it made me feel like I felt like when I was watching that scene in Wonder Woman, or when I felt like when Peter gets up, you know, from under that building. And you know, to me, that's who Carol is in the comics and in this movie. And, you know, if nothing else, it's that will to always get back up. Because when she was a little girl, she didn't have superpowers.
No.
You know, when she fell off that bike, you know, when all these things were happening to her, she was just a regular person. But she didn't listen to anybody tell her she couldn't do anything. And no matter what happened, she got back up and, you know, she moved forward. So, I don't know.
Right.
To me, it was just a great moment. And if nothing else in this whole movie, I think it has that, you know, that little montage.
Right.
You kind of made the whole movie for me. So.
And that was, it actually, in a way, Meg said it last week in the podcast. She referenced that about being a girl and being able to take failure and be able to respond to it, be able to recover from it. And that's part of, you know, you see that. And she was saying that about seeing that in comics, like, not only are they superheroes, but you can see that they can fail and still recover.
Right.
And she referenced that last week. And then it's like, obviously we hadn't seen the movie yet, but then exactly what you said. And it's almost like that chip that the Kree put on her, to harness her, to keep her powers at bay.
Right.
It almost like it suppressed those positive memories, and it just let it, all she could remember was the negatives, all the times she fell down.
Right.
You know, the military one where she fell off the ropes, and you know, so all she, throughout the movie, I think they reference it like, what, maybe two times, three times,
right,
before.
But, right.
The
all
the
you're
climax,
seeing is her falling.
All you're seeing is the failure.
Right.
And then at the end, you see that for each and every one of them, she got up and succeeded.
Right.
She got up and dusted herself off. And that, I mean, that's awesome for anybody.
Well,
but
right. That's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily a female thing.
No.
It's just, you know, the empowerment of, you know, even, you know, you go back to, you know, Rocky, there's a famous line in Rocky too.
Yeah.
Right? It's not,
right.
It's not how many times you can get hit.
It's how many times you get knocked out.
Right. It's how many times you get back up and keep moving forward. And, you know, like I said, I just thought that was a great moment. And, to me, it, you know, it really kind of made the whole movie for me.
Up until that actual scene, one of my favorite scene of the movie when it first happened was when she got her suit.
Right.
When they finally put the right colors on her and they pull back and
it was awesome.
You're like, oh, now this is awesome, right? And then when they did that scene and she broke that thing on her neck, the suppressor or whatever it is, and then she just bursted out of there. You're like, that was, you know, like you said, the build up to it, all the failures, and then watching all the successes to each failure, and then she just, you know, whatever they're trying to do, and talking to what, Supreme Intelligence.
Right.
And then battling inside against Supreme Intelligence. And then it just, you know, That was an awesome, very powerful.
Yeah.
I thought it did. It was one of the more powerful things in. I have a feeling Endgame will have something.
Probably so, but like I said, we see lots of comic book movies and we watch lots of things, and to me, those are like it stuck out in those three movies, you know, basically, you know, in Wonder
right.
Woman and Spider-Man, and then in this, as you know, some of like they're like my favorite moments from any of these movies, I think, just because, you know, and again, you can go back to Captain America, you know, always
right.
getting beat up and always coming back, but I mean, it's
well,
happened.
That's
in
the
other
one
movies.
For me,
yeah. You know, I hate bullies, and you know, there's other
right.
moments too, but they didn't make me feel kind of the way I did watching these three movies. And you know, obviously in Spider-Man, he's a guy, we're guys, but I can't appreciate it from the standpoint of being female because I'm not. But seeing it in Wonder
right.
Woman and seeing it in Captain Marvel, and I can just imagine, you know, like you said, you mentioned how it was impactful for your daughter. Watching that, and like I said, I can just imagine it was very powerful and moving, you know, as a female to see that in the movie. So,
well, I mean, any of our female listeners, let us know.
Yeah, feel free if we have any.
Yeah, if we're way off base here, but I got to imagine it's that much more powerful.
What? Right, it has to be.
You're in. Not only is it, it's one thing for us. Like for me, it's the Captain America one and that alley scene.
Right.
And he just, I could do this all day. And I was like, I lived that. But for me, it's to see that, and then, but for that, we're experiencing. You're experiencing the Spider-Man one in a predominantly male
right
environment, right? For a woman to experience this and be like, ha ha, and you're in a predominantly male environment, if you know what I
right.
mean. So it's like you're infiltrating their environment, which I think that's what's so powerful to me. And that's what I think even Meg likes that part. It's like, you know, she know the comics are for her too, and they're for women too, but it's still, it's, you know, the percentages just aren't there.
Right.
So it's got to be that much more special to me, I would say.
Yeah, like I said, obviously we're just guessing, but I
right.
I would imagine it has to be, right?
Yeah. I you know. So, all right. What else about the movie? That's
yeah.
pretty much. I liked the ending.
Yeah,
I liked,
for sure.
You know, we know we talked about the middle part. Ben Mendelsohn was awesome.
He was great. I like I said, I liked Middleton, his character. Yeah. I liked this. Like I said, I kind of liked the Skrulls in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, they were portrayed well and sympathetic. You know, it did. Like I said, it kind of bugged me that they turned these longstanding bad guys into, you know.
Yeah.
Good guys, but
they could still be. Somebody mentioned this to me today. They could still be bad guys. There's, you know, that was one group of them. That's like you said, it's a long-standing war between the Kree and the Skrulls.
Right.
There's nothing to say that there can't still be going on. And you know, the bad guy is always just, you know, the whichever side your perception falls down
exactly
on.
Right. Well, it's kind of like so. We talked about earlier with the Vader comic, right? In certain circumstances, even Darth
right.
Vader is like a hero yeah. to somebody. So
exactly.
I guess my thing now is, you know, just to kind of theorize a little bit or speculate, because we like to do this, but obviously we're going to get a Captain Marvel 2. Like, there's no way that this movie doesn't
you
get
think?
A sequel. So I guess, but my thing is
signed
now,
on for six movies
is we're going to get. Well, I'll talk about that in just a second, too. But, you know, obviously the next time we see Carol is going to be in 2019. And it's going
yeah.
to be, you know, with the events of Endgame. But where does the sequel fall into place? Because, like, I'm still very interested in the 24 years between, like, I want to know what she was doing all this time that she's been gone. So I'm wondering if the sequel that we get is going to be in that time frame, or if we're just going to get post-Endgame Captain Marvel and she ends up on Earth doing whatever
well,
she does going forward. Because, but, you know, her being signed on for six movies, my theory is that she becomes the Robert Downey Jr. of Phase 4 of of these movies, and she's just going to appear like Iron Man does throughout, you know, all these MCU movies.
Supposedly, one of the reasons people are upset is she is going to take over for Captain America, and she is going to be the quote leader.
Well, we don't know that for sure.
No, but that's the speculation,
right? Well, you know, because God knows, God knows in the comics she was never leading the Avengers, right?
Monica Rambeau did.
Well, right, but so did Carol.
As Cap, right.
That's what I'm saying. I'm being facetious, she did.
All right, yeah.
In the comics, she led both of those teams. You know, she leads Alpha Flight. I mean, that's not anything that we shouldn't even be expecting because it already happens in the comics.
Right.
But
a lot of these people that are getting upset, not that we want to get back into that, but don't know that.
Right.
They think this is all new.
Right.
So, I think there's going to be a pretty prevalent element of time travel involved coming up in Endgame. And that could come into the next movies as well. So
right, like I said, I'm just wondering because you know, obviously, if you go back to Wonder Woman, you know, Wonder Woman number one was set place in World War One, right? And then we flash forward; we've already seen her in the Justice League, but her sequel to Wonder Woman still takes place in the 80s. So we've already gone back in time again for her sequel. So I'm just wondering if with Captain Marvel we get a similar kind of setup where. You know, I know we're going to see her a lot in the present day because she's going to appear in lots of other Marvel movies. But in her sequel, I'm interested in the 24 years between when she left Earth and when she comes back to Earth. It didn't take that long to get the Kree settled on, to get the Skrulls settled on their planet. You know, it didn't
take...
Well,
she goes back to end the war.
Right, but
so
I'm saying, but it didn't
take
24 years necessarily to do that. Maybe it does, I don't know, but... I get the feeling she's having all these space adventures out there that's what I want to see. You know?
So the movie ends. Jude Law's still alive.
Right.
She sends him back. Ben Mendelsohn is still, obviously, she's with them.
Right. She leaves to help them get settled.
She
right,
leaves
to
help them.
Right.
And he was so good in this role, and the reviews, if you will, the way people are talking about him, why don't they got to be bringing him back, you know, I can't see this being a one-off for him. He was so good in that. Why wouldn't you bring him back in the whatever the sequel to this is going to be? And like you said, it's like the next movie could take place in like 1999.
Right. Like I said, we don't know. Obviously we're just at this point,
it might not even take, it could be like a Ragnarok. It never takes place on Earth.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, like, I want it to be a space event. Like, I don't want her to be back on Earth. We already get the feeling. Now, of course, we don't know for sure, but we get the feeling that since she left in 95, she has not been back to Earth until 2019. Now, that might not be true, but that's kind of the impression that you get, that she's been gone all this time. So, again, like I said,
Even Thor has popped in here and there. But didn't hook up with the Avengers.
But
my
hope is that we get those in-between years in her sequel movies. Like, I kind of want to see her out there meeting whoever she meets out there, you know, and having these space adventures. I don't want her necessarily popping back to Earth for the sequels and then, you know, flying back out into space again. Because, like I said, that's the big question is what's she been doing all this time? You know, where she been
now,
and what she been
doing. We kind of have a glimpse of it, but there's still, and you could still do another movie on Marvel and a prequel to Captain Marvel.
Right.
So, I mean, there's so much. It's so funny because they've done 21 movies and you're like, what more could they do? And we're sitting here going, well, never mind all the books and years and years of comics
they could
reference.
They haven't even scratched the surface. Yeah, there's so much they could
do. But they're making their own stuff up as well.
Right.
That it makes it like, okay, well, we could borrow from this and do that. And it's just so much fun. And I think this is, I mean, going from Captain Marvel now, here we are today, and we literally, 6 weeks away? something like that.
Yeah, from Endgame.
Endgame. So it's then we'll have a long wait between that and
Spider-Man's in July.
Right. So that's a little bit of a wait.
Right, and then we don't even know. After that, we don't know. We don't have anything official.
And that's the thing, is I think Spider-Man's going to have a lot to do with the end of Endgame. And then after the...
Well, after Spider-Man Far From Home, that's when everything's going to be announced. Like, Kevin Feige's already said.
Right.
Like, we're not announcing anything until after this movie.
I think at the end of that movie, the mid-credit scene is going to be the scene to see, because you'll be like, okay, let's, you know, I need to know what's coming next and when.
Like, they're not working on stuff. We just don't know what it is. You know, we don't exactly know. Like, we know they're working on the Eternals. We know there's a Black Panther 2. You know, we know some of these things, Doctor Strange 2, but we don't know where any of them fall in the timeline. We don't know when they're coming out. But like I said, I get the feeling that they're going to release some projects after Spider-Man that they don't want to release now because of spoilers. So I'm kind of interested to see what they have coming.
I feel like, is it me? I mean, do you feel this way? That it's like after Spider-Man? Yeah. After Spider-Man, it almost feels like they haven't made anything. They don't, you know what I mean? Like, all right, 2 years from now.
Well, no, that,
like,
that's
almost
what I'm saying.
It's over.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. They're working on something. There's no way they're not working on something. We just don't know what it is. Even if it's Doctor Strange 2 or something, they've got to be working on something. I just think they're keeping it under wraps, because I don't know if we're going to go 2 to 3 years before we get the next phase of these movies coming.
God, I hope not.
You know?
Well, then you have Disney Plus, too. They could be adding shows and doing the whole, like, kind of like Star Wars has, like, a bunch of stuff that's not movie-related, but it's still canon.
Speaking of Disney Plus, did you see the What If series now that they've announced that they're going to do basically like an anthology series based on the What If comics?
No.
Yeah, so they were talking about that earlier this week. So I can't wait for, like, Disney Plus can't get here fast enough for me now, because
I know
there's so much stuff that they've got coming up. And it has to be coming relatively soon, I would think. I know they say
fall.
End of the year, but, like, The Mandalorian is already done, so they're not going to keep it done forever. Like, they want people to start watching it, so.
Right. Isn't that where they're doing... They're doing a few of the Marvel things, too. Aren't they doing, like, Scarlet Witch?
Right, well, they're working on other stuff, but I know The Mandalorian itself is officially wrapped and complete, so I'm sure they've got some post-editing to do on it, but once you have projects that are ready to go, you got to get the service online so people can – they didn't spend the money to make it.
Well, yeah.
So nobody can watch it, you know? So I'm hoping that it's, you know, summertime.
I don't think so.
I'm hoping.
I think it'll be fall, September at the earliest.
Yeah. I also saw that now they're projecting the Fox deal to close next week. I saw that posted today on Facebook.
That's the whole other part of this universe. Yeah. You stop bringing in the X-Men.
Yep. Well, and so, that's what I'm saying. There could be
Could
be announcements coming that, like I said, we're just not hearing about because maybe deals haven't closed and, you know, other stuff. But I don't know. Lots of rumors out there on what they've got in the works.
Yeah. So
I've heard standalone Silver Surfer movie coming, which would be awesome. I would love to see that.
So let's wrap up with the mid-credit scene and the final credit scene.
All right.
I love the mid-credit scene.
I mean, the mid-credit scene couldn't have been a surprise to anybody because, I mean, we knew that kind of
it was still excellent, though.
No,
it wasn't
excellent.
A surprise, but it was still powerful.
It was very powerful. It was more than I was expecting. Like, it felt like it had more content than most of the mid-credit scenes that we get, or more importance, I think, than most of the ones that we get.
You said that, like, we knew that was coming. I wasn't expecting to have her show up like that.
Well, no, I was. That's what I'm saying. I wasn't either. Like, I knew that it was going to have something to do with the pager. You know, we talked right. about it last week or 2 weeks ago. Like, the mid-credits scene, everybody knew that it was going to have something to do with the pager. Because
I like how they had the pager connected to, like, a nuclear-powered car battery.
Right.
like, she told them, it's like, obviously, they don't know what it is, so they don't know how if it needs extra power, but they're like, they don't know. So they just, what, give it a bunch of juice and hope for the best? like, oh, that was great. But then when she showed up and came in and was like, and I loved how she said, like, that, like, when Fury had said earlier in the movie, it's Fury. It's not Nick Fury. It's not Nick.
Right.
It's not Nick Fury. It's not Nicholas Fury. It's Fury. Just Fury.
Right.
What was your mother call you? Fury. What do your kids call you? When I have them, they'll call me Fury.
Right.
But then when she shows up, she's like, where's Fury?
Yeah, right.
You know, and that was it. And I wasn't expecting that.
I wasn't either. And then I wondered.
I thought that was awesome.
And then I had to wonder to myself, what's the security like at the place where the Avengers are hanging out? Because Carol just sneaks up on them.
Just walked in.
Just walked in, you know. So obviously nobody's watching the front door. But
yeah,
which I
well, Ant-Man's knocking at the front door,
right? Hey. But yeah, I thought it was awesome. More than I thought we would get, but like I said, still kind of expected. Like I knew that it was going to have something to do with Endgame
and Cap,
and the pager. But
Cap still has his beard,
right? So where?
So
in the...
that's very early on in the movie. That's got to be like literally hours after, because you see,
right.
What you see the numbers are just going. The people are still dying,
right.
Or disappearing, because you saw the first like worldwide number was at 3 billion, and it was still climbing.
Well, right.
And then they had the different countries around, and it was all in the millions or whatever. But the original big plate that goes by the first time says worldwide, and it's like 3 billion. And then it's got the comma, and then it's just numbers just going.
Right. You get the feeling that it's very shortly after the snap. But then you kind of have to wonder, how did they get the pager? They were all in Wakanda when the snap happened. And Fury and Maria Hill were, I guess, in New York City or wherever, you know, some major city.
Right.
So how did they find the pager? That's the biggest question. But yeah, so you get the feeling that when we see the Endgame trailer, obviously we see Cap clean shaven.
Shaven, right.
And so you get the feeling that Captain Marvel is already back on Earth doing something while they're sitting around answering the door for Scott Lang. You know, they already have Carol working on, you know, she's already back doing something at that point. So they're
right. Yeah, she starts off right at she's going to be right at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
We're going to get we'll get probably a little backstory on where she's been.
Right, but not a lot because they're not really even looking for her. Like they weren't even expecting her because they never knew about her. So it's not like she has to it's not like they're going to say where you've been all this time because
they're going to be like who are you?
Who are you? But it's not like they were waiting on somebody they knew. She's an unknown to them, so might just get, more of a who are you, and she'll say, well, I'm Carol, I've been in space, whatever. But but I don't know that we get a ton of backstory. You know, Endgame is going to be almost 3 hours, and it's going to be jam-packed. Like, I don't think we're getting a lot of backstory for people. It's going to be running and gunning from the opening scenes, I would imagine. So
I can't wait.
Yeah.
We'll get into more of that. We'll do a preview of Endgame. That'll probably be 3 hours.
Yeah.
This is almost three hours.
Yeah, this has gone on pretty long, too.
Here we go.
Two hours and 14
if
minutes.
If you're still listening.
Yeah. we had three restarts, so we've been going for a while.
Yeah, this has been a late night, and I'm still going to get this thing done.
Yeah. So, all right. So moving on to the end credit scene. You know, the end credit scenes in all these movies really, they seem to be just like the comic relief throwaway
like,
scenes.
Ha ha, we got you to stay here.
Right. You know, just like, you know, my favorite one, of course, is the one at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming. Because Captain America basically comes out and says, "You wasted your time. This is worthless."
He does the Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
But, go home.
But so this was, kind of the same. It's just like a little comedy scene of
It was
Goose the Cat.
But I got it was a comedy scene. It was kind of, and you were like, when I saw it with Jen was like, "Oh my god." Oh, because she loves cats. Yeah. She's had a ton of cats.
Well, Lydia,
up,
too. She's like, oh, my God.
That's so real. Yeah. It's like, it's going to throw up. But you didn't know what it was going to throw up.
Yeah, I almost thought it was going to be, a whole person coming out for a second.
Right.
You know?
But actually, you know what? I know it was done for humor and all that, but it did answer a question. I was like, so when do they get the Tesseract back?
Well, right, yeah. Obviously,
right there at the
Fury
end,
comes
it's on
back
his desk.
To his desk, and it's just laying there.
Yeah, he's going to come back. Or if Fury even finds it. Maybe Coulson finds it, so Coulson knows about it. Who knows?
Right.
I don't know. I didn't think it was that much of a throwaway, because I was actually already questioning that myself. Like, oh, when do they get that thing out of the cat?
Right.
The Flarkin. So. All right. Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. All right, that's a good one. That's a long one. That was fun. A great movie, though.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. So, let us know what you thought. Did you enjoy it? I know some people didn't. I'm getting some of our listeners are not as happy with the movie. I've heard that. Let us know on Twitter. Email me if you don't want everybody to know. you can email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. Or we can have a conversation on Twitter @thebrightside_chat. We are on iTunes, The Bright Side Chat. We're on Google Play. We are on Spotify.
All right.
Yeah. I put us in for iHeartRadio 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They said it takes 2 weeks. Apparently, they don't know how big we are.
I know, right?
Spotify
knew. They jumped right on it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I tried to get on that one months ago, and they didn't take us.
Oh, okay.
They didn't take SoundCloud. It wasn't us. It was our provider, and now they do. So that's why we got on there. So that was pretty cool. So you can listen to us, and if there's something, and the only reason I'm on Spotify is Meg's boyfriend said, "Why aren't you guys on Spotify?" I go, "I don't know. Let me check." 15 minutes later, we were on Spotify.
There you go.
So if you guys want us on something, let us know, and I'll try to get it there. It's not that hard. At least it's not that hard to try. And Facebook?
Facebook.com/brightsidechat.
Alrighty. And that should do it for another week. It's been a long one.
Take care.
I'll talk to you later, John.
All right.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to The Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors that we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. Apothesis Comics and Lounge of St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to The Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.